I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon. A new play and the history of how this play came to be is part of our story this hour. Five Presidents will open at the Milwaukee Rep this weekend. We had a chance to see a preview last night, KP and I did, and it's right up our alley. It takes place where four former presidents and one current president are meeting at the funeral in 1994 of President Richard Nixon. And it's a conversation among five of them. There's a Secret Service agent who's involved as well. But they talk about history. They talk about the job. They dig at each other a little bit. And it's really good, particularly for those of you who like presidential history. It is written by Rick Cleveland. Rick was going to be with us this hour, but he is sick. He's an interesting guy, too. I think that my life would be so diminished. I don't know what I would watch on television. I've seen all of House of Cards, all of the seasons, and I'm in my second viewing of West Wing. Every single episode I saw all 7 years. And he is the author of Five Presidents, and one of our guests will tell us how that came to be. So that's the play that has its world premiere, really. It's a Milwaukee big deal, because Rick was commissioned by one of our guests to write this play, and he is the artistic director of the Milwaukee Rep, Mark Clements, who's joined us before. Mark started in the 2010-2011 season. He is an award-winning international theater director. His work has appeared in all kinds of theaters all over Europe and the United States. I'm sure you're familiar with some of what he has done. He saw a play that Rick had done in Chicago some years ago and was really taken with it. And then by circumstance, their paths crossed again. And Rick had this idea for this play about five presidents. And, well, Mark will tell you the rest of the story as we get to him. Mark, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah,
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our great pleasure to have you here. Also joining us in our studio is one of the members of the cast. He plays Special Agent Michael Kirby. Reese Madigan is a Milwaukee Rep associate artist. He returns to the Rep after appearing in as Thomas in Venus in Fur last season. He's been in Othello, Lombardi, played in Death of a Salesman, great plays, all they are. 39 Steps, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. He was in King Lear. Abe Lincoln in Illinois. I'm wearing my Abe Lincoln pin. I showed both of them in honor of my favorite president today at the Lincoln Center Theater. And the list goes on. He has many credits. Reese, thanks very much.
It's a pleasure being here. Thank you so much.
Thoroughly enjoyed the show last night.
Thank you very much.
It was really great. So it came about, it's really an interesting story, Mark, that sometimes people we know from our past reappear and the moment is right, and you commissioned a play.
Yeah.
What's the story?
Well, basically, I visited in the late 90s Chicago for the first time, and I was doing an east-to-west journey, and I stopped off in Chicago midway, and I happened to see a friend of mine, Ina Marlow, who was running the Organic Theater Company at the time, said, well, listen, you should go to Steppenwolf, you should go to the Goodman, and you should go and see this really interesting play that's on at Victory Gardens right now. So I went and saw it, and I really, really enjoyed the play very much, particularly the central performance as well by an actor called Marty McClendon. And anyway, so much so I got back and we programmed the play at Derby Playhouse, and Rick Clank came over, and I also managed a quid pro quo kind of thing with Equity, American Equity and British Equity, to get Marty over to play the role. And that all went very well. And then, you know, at the time Rick was writing on West Wing, that team were really gaining some traction with West Wing. So it was a point of interest, as it is now still, you know, 15 years on or whatever it is. Yeah. And anyway, I move into my office. I'm appointed artistic director in 2009. I start officially in 2010. And shortly after that time of taking over the reins from Johan Reddy, my predecessor, I was sitting in my office, and it was kind of bizarre because I was actually thinking, oh, you know, like Marty McClendon, I wonder whatever happened to him. I think he was from around here. Nothing of it. Literally, probably 2 days later, I get this call out of the blue from Marty McClendon. I said, you're not going to believe this, but I was actually thinking about you. He said, well, guess what? I'm married. I've got kids. kids. I'm now part of the faculty at Carthage College. And guess what? You know, I've just read that you've taken over the theater at Milwaukee as artistic director and the rep. And guess what? I'm working with Rick Cleveland right now. He's doing a play for us, actually about Abe Lincoln. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, he said, well, can we come and see you? And I said, yeah, I'd love to. So they came to visit me, and we were chatting around and just filling in the years. And as any good freelance writer will do, and just said, we said, well, we must work together again. That was fun that time. And he said, well, funnily enough, I got this play. I've got an idea for a play. And I said, what is it? He said, well, it's called Five Presidents at the moment. That's its working title. And it's about the five living presidents at the time who were at Nixon's funeral. What they might have said on that day to each other behind closed doors, a reflection on Watergate and how that had changed the face of the presidency. That was it. And I said, you know what? I want to do it. It just struck me as something really interesting. And the only caveat I gave, after a few more conversations was, I said, I'm not sure I want this play to take a particular political party line. I don't want it to be a left bashing the right or a right bashing the left, because, we're so polarized in our thinking about politics in this country. And how can we, it feels to me, incumbent as a theater maker to try and create platforms of opportunity about difficult topics, the hot topics of the day, whether it be immigration, whether it be gun control, whether it be marriage equality, the health system, mental illness, whatever those things are, and present a very well-balanced argument where people both sides of the fence, political fence, could actually watch a play, reflect on it, and not feel they were lectured at. And that was really what we set out to do.
Mm-hmm. And you did it very well. It's really absorbing.
Thank you.
Rick's story is fascinating, too, that I was just starting in the radio world when Richard Nixon's Watergate hearings were going on, and we were riveted by them. I mean, we would just all day long watch this. But when I was reading about him, I thought it was great. He was 6 years old, and his mom said, Rick, go out and play. And he wouldn't go outside to play because he was watching the Watergate hearings when he was 6 years old, which indicates he was doing the right thing with his life later on.
And so much of his work, with the House of Cards and as well, is just very much focused around, he has a great interest. I mean, he's regaled me. Well, he's also got his HBO TV thing that they filmed of My Buddy Bill, which is really from the times that he'd spent with Clinton and hanging out with Clinton and, what that was like. And what a sort of charismatic guy he was, and and obviously with some kind of faults as well, and a lot of media attention on him, and sort of that his one man show kind of characterizes what that friendship and relationship was. And Rick has just regaled us all with some great stories.
I imagine.
Just through visiting the White House on multiple occasions, and and being able to have access to sit in the chair of the Oval Office and do those sort of cool things that we all would quite like to do, I guess.
Exactly. Reese, you play the special agent. I'm interested in, as an actor, you don't have to play one of the presidents, but you are an acclaimed actor. And I guess, did you play Abe Lincoln?
No, I didn't play Abe Lincoln. I was one of the many. Sam Waterston was actually Abe Lincoln in that production of Abe Lincoln in Illinois. Yeah.
What's interesting about this production, I was thinking, what an assignment it must be to play somebody. You could easily do a caricature, but all of these performances have little things that you recognize immediately who they are, but they're their own actor's own interpretation of some people who are very famous, who we've all watched over and over again on the news. Is that a challenge, do you think, as an actor, to walk in and play George Herbert Walker Bush or Bill Clinton or Gerry Ford?
I think certainly it is, because everybody comes in with their preconceived idea about who this president was. And the closest I've come was a couple of seasons ago. We did Lombardi over at Milwaukee Repertory Theater, and Brent Hazelton is the associate artistic director. I was cast as Paul Horning, and around here, you might as well be a president. I mean, he really walks on hallowed ground. And when I got cast, Brent said, oh, by the way, Horning is going to be at opening night. And so I had about 2 months to shake in my boots. So I certainly can can identify with what these guys are going through. But
especially if that real live person shouts at you in the middle of the performance, which is what happened.
He did?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, we got to opening night, and there was a luncheon at the Milwaukee Athletic Club that we all attended. That Bart Starr was in attendance, and as well as Paul Horning, and you know, they're both fantastic public speakers, especially Horning. I mean, he is a real crowd pleaser. So the nerves were going from, you know, 2 months on, but they got worse as opening night approached.
No.
And so we come to opening night, and everybody knows exactly where Bart Starr and Paul Horning are sitting. And pretty much the beginning of the play, Mark will agree, was the audience. It was kind of a weird house because the audience was watching these guys watching the play. And we had an idea about Horning being sort of a playboy and a ladies' man. We had a great intern company that year, so there was a young woman who volunteered for one of the entrances to be on Paul Horning's arm as he walked into a pool hall. And so it occurred about midway through the play, and Horning walks in and gives the girl a peck on the cheek and turns around and says, "Hey, fellas," to begin the scene. And Horning, from about 10 feet away from me, shouts, "Oh, don't let her go." And so luckily I had a beer in my hand, and I toasted him, and everybody started applauding, and I tried to get the girl to come back out, and she wouldn't. And I said, "Well, you snooze, you lose, Horn." And we got a huge laugh, and the balloon was popped, if you will, and everybody got to really, you know, the play was the play after that. People realized, they said yes to having these
right.
demigods in the audience, and we could actually play the play after that. But that's my story to dine out on about Paul Horning. But certainly I do know the challenges of great expectations as you're having to play an iconic person.
Yeah, and they do it so well. You have assembled a really fine cast of actors here who obviously have spent a lot of time figuring out how to do that, to be historical, but to have a unique interpretation of who these people are. You know who they are within the first 5 minutes.
Well, that's great. I mean, they're doing a line run through right now, so it's a shame they're not hearing this, because they would be they would want to give you a big hug if they heard you say that, because that's really what they've worked very hard at. Because you know, everybody knows it's not the real people, and everybody, as Reese says, has an expectation about how they sound and how they look. I mean, probably of the five presidents. You know, Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, probably everybody, and even Clinton to a certain extent, could give you a sort of rough impersonation, maybe not a very good one, but everybody on the street could give you an impersonation of what those guys sound like. I think Gerald Ford and H.W. Bush are a little harder, so you have a little more slack with, particularly with Ford, you know, because his office was very short, and he was the one president not voted into office, thereby, you know, default and tragedy. And I think that these guys really, once they knew they were doing the gig, they really, really focused very, very heavily on, you know, reading material. Actually, a lot of them were very politically savvy and interested in the subject matter anyway.
Right.
It transpired that they all did. They were, I mean, you know, Mark Jacoby, who plays H.W. Bush, is a vociferous reader of, you know, political biographies. And, you know, they came into the room armed with a huge amount of material, and actually were often like, you know, saying to Rick, "Oh, you know, that date or that moment there, he didn't drink that drink. Actually, he liked gin
in between
the years of 43 and 45, but switched to brandy in 48, you know.
Oh, wow.
It was, and they were like, Rick was like, whatever, you know. But they were very detailed. Yeah.
Interesting. Somebody says, and I can't remember who says it in the play, "If you want this job, there's something deeply wrong with you."
Ronald Reagan says that.
You know, and when you think about it, when they all talk about the number of people they've lost under their watch and what it is they had to deal with, there is something to that. I think about that all the time with almost every president, even I don't like the president. What a job this is. What a job.
Well, one of the things about the play, and, you know, and a riff on what I was saying earlier about trying to avoid political party bashing and an alignment, you know, or an alignment one way or another, is that the focus of the play is about the office of being president. Like, it's a very small and exclusive club.
Right.
And many people, I think probably everybody answers at some point, why would anyone want to do that job? How your life irrevocably changes. Nothing will ever, ever be the same again. You will never, ever be able to go anywhere, even after you're long out of office. So sometimes you're there for 4 years, sometimes you're there for 8 years, but life will change irrevocably for you, your family, your entourage. It will never be the same again. You will never be able to go anywhere without a security detail. The pressure for these guys and the information and they have access to and the burden of guilt when, you know, in terms of collateral damage, in terms of making certain decisions, that they ultimately take on the advice of many, many, you know, security councils I think it's an impossible job. So we really try in the play to talk about the things that are exclusive to those gentlemen who've held the office and how that's just such a unique position, and really probably none of us could get a full insight into that. Mm-hmm. Even if you've read all the biographies, you get a snapshot, but what it must actually be like to survive on 3 to 4 hours of sleep a day and or not.
Really, I know. You are, though, tougher on Nixon, and maybe because they're at his funeral, but somebody, I was sort of in the dark writing my notes, so I don't know who said this either, but I thought this was an interesting description. Nixon had a first-rate intellect, but he was a third-rate person, and Ford not wanting to give a eulogy because he did the pardon, and that stays with Ford forever in his life. Do you think it's rougher on Nixon? I mean, that's a telling comment about him from one of the presidents.
Well, I think it's fair. You know, I mean, I think what the play tries to do is that, you know, Watergate changed. I mean, you know, I think in terms of political skullduggery, there are things that have happened since that time that make Watergate potentially look like a fairy tale, I would suggest. But the thing about Watergate, it was very, very public. It was all on tape. It was the first time, you know, is this pre-social media really kicking in on in a major way? And it was just, it was one of those things that the country believed in. Even if you didn't respect the man, you respected the office. and the play suggests, as is the case, that the office was solid. It may have been done by others since. The play suggests that too. But I mean, this was a very public discovery of a sullying of the office, and there was no hiding and recovery from it. So it put the country and that office in jeopardy, and probably put a level of scrutiny on people in that office, which has changed the face of it since that time. And I think that's really what the play reflects, and some of the protagonists in the play do reflect upon. Also, you know, Richard Nixon was known for being a very difficult, complicated man. I mean, you know, in my research, one of the things that was interesting was that Gerald Ford, I mean, hugely admired Nixon. I mean, so he felt very let down. Ford was a real straight shooter, was very, very popular and admired within his immediate entourage, and he was admired because he was a straight talker, that he was not crooked. So it was hard for him, and then hard for him then to publicly forgive Nixon, which kind of was political suicide in one way for him, and ended any credibility for him. And I think 20 years on, you know, Rick would probably tell you this if he was here, 20 years on or so, and now, you know, people have started recognizing that actually He had no choice. It was not in the best interest of the country at that time that Nixon would have gone to trial, maybe gone to jail. I mean, it would have killed him. And the public reflection on that of what would have been disastrous for the country as a nation and internationally as well. So there was really, you know, I think Ford had to sort of politically fall on his sword, if you like, to do that.
I think from the audience response, a lot of people were surprised that Ford was almost a Green Bay Packer.
Yeah, that came out in the play. Again, Rick's presidential knowledge and research for this play is voluminous, and you know he's probably amassed enough research to write 5 separate biographies. And I believe he said as part of researching the play, he put together notebooks of things that these presidents all said in confidence, and certainly a lot of them, like that first-rate intellect but a third-rate person, which I believe George H.W. Bush actually said. You know, it just came came out of Rick's research of actual things that these guys said in life.
Yeah. So for both of you, one of the things that I thought about after seeing the play was, if I were to put five presidents, and I have my favorites, I mean, I have a button of my favorite, but there are certain presidents I can read about constantly, and Lincoln is my all-time favorite because he was an extraordinary man, and what he wrote, he was such a gifted writer in his life, and, you know, I just find him endlessly. My audience will find I'm boring with this because I talk about Lincoln a lot, but when you have a talk show, he's worth talking about.
Of course.
But if I were to put five people in a room who had been former presidents, that's what I was thinking about last night, who would I put in that room who really I thought were dynamic presidents? And I was interested in your historical perspective on this. If you had to put, just as human beings who are interested in history, maybe three or four people in a room and have the conversation who weren't there last night, but you could pick historically to put in a room to do a similar play, who would they be?
Well, it depends whether your focus is on, you know, what the focus of conversation you'd want. You know, I mean, in terms of lighting up the room a little bit and controversy, you know, you could veer in one direction. Certainly LBJ would be in there potentially. But, you know, I mean, I think if we were doing, you know, what, eight presidents, the play, the sequel, who might be in there? I don't know. Kennedy, I guess, would be great to see in there, and Lincoln, of course. I don't know, really.
FDR?
I think certainly FDR
would. FDR. Yeah, FDR would be, yeah, that would make a great play, actually.
Yeah, and I think to some degree as well, Truman, who kind of found his way into office,
right.
who was, you know, tasked with the enormous responsibility of, you know, dropping the H-bomb. Mm-hmm. But both of them on, the A-bomb, both of them on Japan. You know, a guy who started out as a haberdasher, and here he is in this most powerful position in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is it true that this came from a photo that Rick saw somewhere of the five presidents? Where were they all?
Well, there's a famous photograph of the five presidents at the occasion. I mean, you can pretty much, if you Google and just go on YouTube, you can see pretty much the entire. So it wasn't a state funeral. They didn't want that. Nixon didn't want that. But obviously there were cameras there. It was documented. There weren't a huge amount of foreign leaders there. It was a tricky one, I think, for people. But the five living presidents were there. And, you know, Bob Hope was there. And
Red
Billy
Skelton.
Red Skelton, exactly. And Billy Graham. And it was about, I think there were about 2,000 people. Rick and I actually went to Yorba Linda.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we did. We went and researched it. And actually the set that you see, the scenic element, is literally a facsimile of a room that we... I'm not sure we were supposed to be in there, but Rick kind of... We paid our entrance fee at the Nixon Presidential Library, and Rick bolted off like a greyhound down the corridor. I said, where are we going? He said, I don't know. And just pushed the door, and we barged into this room, and I was like expecting some kind of alarms to go off. And he said, this is it. This is what we need. And it was really like a function suite. In fact, you can, it's very, not particularly presidential. I mean, there are elements that are. The services actually held outside in the sort of gardens, which actually were rose gardens given to Nixon and his wife from Bob Hope. They were given as a present. But this room, I mean, is not really any different than you would expect from any sort of, like, I don't know, Sheraton Hotel room that you would hire for a banqueting suite.
Right.
You know, so the idea was just that it was very unprepared, very non-presidential. And this can often happen where, you know, the presidents will be convening, and Rick had experienced this with Bill Clinton in the past, where, you know, the venue's here, you're going to convene at this time, but everyone gets there 10 minutes before, and where do you go? So they often, the Secret Service will come in, they'll find a holding bay which looks safe, and where they can cover all the entrances, the security can, and they just say, they put them in there, and that's where So, you know, literally the opening of the sequence, Reese comes in as the Secret Service man and he's clearing up coffee cups and, you know, a painting and some floral arrangements which have been from another event. And so we wanted it to be very off the cuff. But that was really how it found it. And it was so funny because we would stay on our phones taking pictures at Yorba Linda of the door handles and the and the fire alarms and the, you know, just the carpet and literally, we've created, Todd Ivins, who's our scenic designer, does many of the designs here for my work at the Rep, has created an absolute facsimile of that room that we were in.
Yeah, it's very nice.
With one fantastic artistic embellishment, he's included a portrait that I don't think is in the actual room of George Washington.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you have
I
the first president
that.
Overseeing.
And the other portrait of Richard Nixon, whose eyes are looking at everybody in the room, no matter where you go.
Yes, yes indeed.
Have you followed the work of, or read more about the work of Secret Service agents as a result of your being... It is an incredible job.
It's an incredible job.
Yeah.
I mean, the first of all, the psychology of someone who would willingly lay down, you know, his life for another person. I mean, what kind of... I mean, certainly soldiers and do that all the, you know, all the time as a matter of course. But these guys are really a special breed. And so I got to do, you know, a lot of research about them. And again, how realistic do you want to be? Oftentimes, these are the only people who tell the most powerful people in the world no. And they often take a lot of flack for it. But at the same time, they also have to be very trustworthy men who are you know, party to very, very intimate details of the president's, you know, home lives, especially, you know, I read about, you know, some of the men and women who were around during the Monica Lewinsky scandal. It was, you know, were witness to some very, very difficult behind closed doors discussions between, you know, a man and a wife that, you know, nobody should really be privy to, but because it's their job, that's where they have to be, and they have to be that trustworthy. And so, it's really amazing. They have to be vigilant all the time. Often I've read that you don't get to go to the bathroom. You know, you're on your feet all day, and if you have to get an IV to get rehydrated, then that's what you're going to get. Yeah, essentially. So you really have to. You don't get a break. Period. Because if they're of the mindset that if you, you know, lapse for 1 second in concentration, that's when somebody can die, and they have a really tough job. One of the documentaries I was watching was I believe President Clinton happened to be in Africa. He had rerouted. Air Force One for a funeral and decided to get out and walk in the funeral processions. And that just set off every alarm, you know, that the Secret Service had. But these guys went out there and dealt with a very, very difficult situation where the crowd was pressing in on the president and they really had to, you know, in a blink, get him out of there and get him back on the plane. So they're pretty incredible men and women. They have a whole training center in Washington that I found out about, and they have...
You really did your research for this role. I'm impressed.
Well, I mean, that's one of the great things about being an actress. You get a fantastic education, you know, with every show that you do, and especially one like this. But there's a... their training center is set up for different scenarios, almost like a Hollywood backlot. They have different... like a school, a government office, a house, to practice all kinds of contingencies for attacks that can come from any angle. So they're constantly having to go back and train just to stay on their toes constantly. Mm-hmm. So it's an amazing job.
We welcome phone calls. I know many of you haven't seen the play yet because there have only been previews. It opens, when does it open officially?
Friday night.
Yeah. And I know there's huge interest in it, and it will be sold out, many performances. But you can certainly join us to talk about our interest, our renewed interest in presidential history and theater, certainly on television, and House of Cards. I'm sure many people in our audience have been watching that. West Wing was, I'm sure, among people in our audience, a very big hit. The portrayal of presidents on stage or... And this whole idea that Mark talked about is not trying to be divisive, but to find out what the common elements were in their job, what they had to face in terms of putting people in harm's way, in terms of legislation, in terms of being among a very, very small group of people who were leaders of this country, which is a big thing. It's really a good play, and we're talking about it this hour of our program. Mark Clements met Rick Cleveland, who wrote the play some years ago. They reconnected. Rick was interested in this Five Presidents idea. Mark said, I like the idea too, and so it happened, and here it is. It's on stage in Milwaukee. Reese Madigan plays Special Agent Michael Kirby. He's a Milwaukee Rep associate artist and has done lots of work, including some political roles in his acting career. Here's our number if you want to join us. You know, you don't have to, but you can, you know, take it wherever you want. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is @KDunnShow. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. Let's talk about, and maybe because I'm a political diehard and have been all my life too, I really seek out programs like West Wing, and a play like this would be right up my alley, and West Wing I'm seeing again and again. But they're popular as well. So is it that we're getting this renewed interest in politics and the presidency in this country? How do you explain this fascination, the House of Cards that Rick did, the West Wing, aberrations, just well-done dramas, or is there something about the political process?
What do you think?
I think there's a hunger for, you know, the two things that always create a hunger, it seems to me, are sport and politics, and the two, you know, could be aligned. It's interesting that since during my tenure, anyway, the two shows that have been selling like crazy in advance, I mean, like tenfold of what they would normally be, were Lombardi and now Five Presidents.
Really?
Yeah,
interesting.
I mean, we have many performances sold out already. And it was the same. We did this as a co-production with Arizona Theater Company. So we've moved the play three different times, you know, with the same cast and the same set and me going everywhere and Rick going everywhere with it and seeing how it is with an audience and tweaking it. And so it's what we call a rolling world premiere. But the same thing in Arizona was just crazy popular there, too. So I don't know. I think there is an appetite. I mean, I know that House of Cards at the moment, people are just like, you know, going on sort of marathon binges of watching. There's something about this particular play, I think, as well. People are enjoying it because, you know, it's got a lot of humor in it. It's not too heavy. And I think it also looks, regardless of what side of the political fence you sit on, it looks at a period of history which everybody, regardless of where they're coming from on the political spectrum, feels that, you know, it's a safe distance. It's 30-odd years away, Watergate, and we can look at that. And even Republicans can look at it from a sort of, with a wry smile about what happened, but also reflect on the nature of how that particular event changed the country. Like 9/11, you know, that event changed the way we live our lives now, the way we travel. I think in terms of political terms, the way that politicians spoke, how they positioned themselves, what they, you know, the whole Watergate affair changed that forever. And the level of media scrutiny on those indiscretions as well.
Yeah. Put your earphones on. We're going to go to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our first call is from Arizona. Diane is calling from Green Valley, Arizona. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Good afternoon, and I just want to say thank you for having this wonderful program today. I moved to Arizona 2 years ago, but I was always going to the Rep because that was my favorite place to go, and I did a lot of ushering there, too. And the play was just wonderful. And I was wondering if the same cast, and I think you just answered that, the same cast and the same set goes along, too, correct?
Yeah. Did you see the play in Arizona?
I did. I saw
Tucson?
It about a month ago.
In Tucson or Phoenix? Did you see it in Tucson or Phoenix?
In Tucson.
Okay, yeah. So we had a great...
Last year, the Rep had a play out here, too.
We did. I directed that play, too. It was called Clybourne Park. Yeah.
Clybourne Park.
Yeah.
That was really excellent, too.
Thank you very much.
And Lee was in it, and I was very excited because he is my favorite actor.
Yeah, Lee's very special. Yeah, yeah.
And I just wanted to say, too, about the streaming. It's wonderful because I listen to Joy Cardine in the morning. Oh, I have to get up so early now because of... We don't have daylight.
You don't. Well, you got to get up to speed in Arizona.
No, you know, I got to listen to it at like 6 in the morning in order to get the week of the news of the week in review.
Right.
It's an early morning for me. But anyway, it's a nice touch for me because I still feel like I'm partly home.
Great.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you definitely are right now. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So you've done it in Arizona. It started in Arizona.
Yeah, it was a co-production. We call it a rolling world premiere, so which means it's the same actors, the same cast. And it's very valuable on a brand new work because it gives you the opportunity to put it in front of an audience and then things that were not obvious that become extremely obvious when the audience joined us. And this play had way more humor in it than we'd ever envisaged, and people were laughing big, and we were having moments where literally the actors could not speak for 15, 20, 30 seconds. I mean, you saw it last night. There's a couple of moments which again happened, and how do we handle that? You know, what do we do in those gaps when we want to extrapolate the full laughter and humor, but not let it get out of control, that we can get back to the topic and the plot without it feeling clunky? And those are things that we can only learn, we being the actors and the director and the writer together, when we're working on a play and we go, well, we didn't expect that response there. And sometimes, you know, sometimes there's a gasp or an annoyance, and somebody, you know, will come up to us and say, I didn't like that line being said. And you're like, well, did you not like the line being attributed to that particular character? Or, well, they did in fact say it. Or, well, we have the reason to believe they said that thing, you know. So it's been an interesting process because people, you know, have real allegiances to these characters, you know, to Clinton, to Carter. I mean, particularly to Ronald Reagan and to Carter. There's huge, huge allegiances to those particular characters.
Yeah. I thought that it was a really fully... I've interviewed two of the presidents, Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush, many years ago. And I really love the portrayal of the elder Bush, because there is what his role was, you know, in terms of not only getting at some of the other presidents, but kind of this, you know, empathy for other people, which I thought the actor did brilliantly. And I think he's an underrated man in many ways. He was very generous. You know, he was good with the press and really kind of kind. And you felt like he was, you know, a member of your family for years. Just a very nice man.
I think we've tried in the play, Rick has tried to incorporate as well as their flaws, and some, and, you know, we see that. I think the distribution of wealth as far as having a, you know, taking a pop at people is fair. But I think there's also areas that certain, you know, people would have a different view on whether there are any kind of good attributes as well. And we've tried to show good, the qualities, the human qualities of all of those five men to make sure it's a really balanced argument, because that's the point. And the one of the things that's very interesting about these men, you don't see it so much in the play, a little bit in the play, but for example, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter were great friends. As we now know, not at the time of this play, when it was, because we're dealing with April 1994, but H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton have become very close allies. And in fact, sometimes these men have acted in the service of, you know, in terms of political advocacy or national advocacy, have acted with opponents, people who they were, who are arch nemesis to them in when they were in office, or, you know, really kind of extreme animosity between them, and then were able out of office to be able to help each other in a greater interest for the country. And I think the play explores those little areas, and you can see just the foundations, I think, in our play of how that friendship between H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton is what it is today.
And Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon.
Very much. You know, Clinton always said that Nixon was the father he never had. You know, so, it's...
Right.
Yep.
So as an actor, when you look at the political world, and you could have a chance to portray, you know, some historical figure, mm-hmm. some... Well, let's make it a president, because it's about five presidents. Mm-hmm. Who would be... have the most material for an actor? Who would be the, oh, I really want to play this?
Well, I think certainly Abe Lincoln would you know, yeah. for my money, just given the fact that, I mean, he was almost entirely self-taught. He knew his Bible and his Shakespeare, and those went on to inform
right.
not only, you know, the way he wrote, but the way he thought. I mean, this man had a gigantic, massive intellect and I think a huge amount of compassion, and was somebody who was able to bring the country together at a time when it was completely splitting apart. And I don't think that any of us would be here in this circumstance
right.
were it not for the intellect, the heart, and the sacrifice, I think of Lincoln, who you know, it's, the war took a terrible toll mm-hmm. on him, and the responsibility of it was something that weighed on him a great deal. I had the good fortune, actually, there was a Next Act Theater in Milwaukee did the pre-Broadway incarnation of Lombardi, and in that, it was a much different play than the play that came to Broadway by Eric Simonson, but in the version they did at Next Act about, I want to say about 6 years ago, I played Paul Horning again, but I was also double cast as JFK.
The second, oh my goodness.
The second act of that play was sort of an imaginary poker game. Lombardi has a stomach ailment, and he kind of has this reverie about playing cards with people who were figures in his life, and St. Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, and his dad, and Red Blake, the coach of army, and JFK were all these male figures that Lombardi is trying to figure out, you know, the next step in his life and his career. And they're all, it was an interesting kind of back and forth between the two of them. So I got to have my 5 minutes as JFK, which was kind of amazing too. And again, that's another, very quickly, it's another fantastic resource that's now available to actors. Certainly when I was playing Horning, and certainly when I was playing JFK, go on YouTube. You can watch these guys. You can get down to breathing and tick and gesture, and certainly all the actors in this play have done that research, and their portrayals are
yeah, it shows, you know, they've
exacting.
Done their research.
Yeah,
no
exactly.
doubt. Well, may you have many more moments of playing JFK.
Here's hoping, huh?
Yeah, do it. Yeah, it's good. Well, let's go to Nancy is calling in from Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Good afternoon. I remember watching that funeral with great interest when it occurred, and I did not think that he deserved to have all of those accolades and attention and recognition, because I think that his nefarious actions while in office outweighed all the everything else that he ever did. So I'm wondering, in your opinion, what would an ex-president have to do before he was not given the recognition of a state funeral?
Well, I think that the play deals with the complexity of that very issue, too, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the family and Nixon himself didn't want a state funeral. So they felt that would, I think the reasons are obvious. They didn't want to bring that embarrassment, and they knew that that would be not look good on the family, and it would be difficult for people in power to be supportive of that, and there would be kickback from the nation for the viewpoint that you hold, and probably rightly so. So I think, you know, the funeral was held it's obviously a public event, and certain people were invited, so it was covered from a camera point of view and a reporting point of view. It was a significant event happening in the country that day and had to be dealt with. And I think, you know, there were a small amount of people there. He had a huge amount of support, and actually in the play, Reese's character, you know, talks about, which is based on true stories. He was very popular. He was from Yorba Linda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the funeral took place is at where the presidential library is built, is exactly where the house he was, the very modest beginnings, where his father was a citrus farmer, and you can go in that house as it was, where those children, he was one of three, I think, brought up. And
His dad ordered it from a Sears and Roebuck catalog and built it himself.
Did he really?
Yeah, it's incredibly modest beginnings. Mm. And you know, they held it in, and it was almost like a family funeral with extended family invited. And obviously, they couldn't keep the media away, and I don't think they wanted to, because it seemed transparency at that point in his death was also important in terms of a country moving on.
Yeah. Five Presidents, opening at the Rep tomorrow night. It's our conversation this hour. More phone calls and some emails in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming on Facebook, Dagny writes, what age group is appropriate for this play?
Oh, that's always a difficult one because, you know, I think probably, you know, 14 and... Oh, I'm being given the official Milwaukee Rep nod. It's 12 and up. You know, there's a little bit of language there that might upset some people, but I think probably nothing that most 12-year-olds don't hear on a daily basis in a schoolroom.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
Well, schoolyard, let me be specific.
And it's also a good way to... to talk about history too, it's good to see things. You know, you learn about, well, what about Ford? What about, you learn a whole lot, and you're wondering about a lot of history when you see the play if
yeah.
you're young.
And we had you were there last night.
Yeah,
and you would have seen quite a few young people there. I mean, you're student age, and it's amazing how people have, you know, they get the overall flavor of it, but you know, there's some here a name like Ross Perot or
yes.
Agnew and or Liddy, and they will want to kind of, it inspires them to just get their smartphone out, not hopefully not in the performance, but afterwards, and go online and start researching and looking at people, or you know, analyze Iran-Contra, analyze Watergate a little bit more and find out what it is and how that reflects. Did reflect and does reflect on the nation and how we conduct politics in this day and age. So I think young people are really gleaning a lot from it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like a behind closed doors Hall of Presidents down at Disney World. That was always, you know, one of my favorite things to go to as a kid. But this is sort of what these guys would say, you know, off camera. In the green room, if you will.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's good. I'm really glad that you have done it. Are both of you big House of Cards, West Wing fans as well, or not, Mark?
Well, I remember watching West Wing when it first came out, but that was sort of, it was going on, you know, or had been going on when I first met Rick. So, but actually a friend of mine, Aaron Posner, who's a theater director who works for us quite a bit, he actually is a present for me, recently bought me the complete box set.
I've got it too.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah,
isn't it great?
So I'm actually going to revisit it. That sort of time for me, I'm up to. I saw the first House of Cards, you know, when it was the British version.
Oh, should we see that?
Oh,
it's
100%.
Very good.
Ian
okay.
Richardson, you know, who's okay. not with us anymore. But I mean, I think actually people would really, really enjoy it. And Susanna Harker, actually, is an actress that I work with, played Maddie, played the sort of female interest, the young female interest in that. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Okay.
And anybody who, I would highly recommend it.
Okay.
And I'm sort of in just the first few episodes of season two. We've just been so busy with this play that it's been just difficult. But I'm looking forward to having one of those binges that everyone else is enjoying.
Well,
right,
you got 7 years worth, so
yeah.
It's going to be a long binge.
Yeah, yeah.
So we should see the British version. Thank you. We will
yeah,
do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And how about you?
I was a big fan of West Wing, and I have to say that I have not delved into House of Cards, but I'm looking forward to a binge watch in my future.
So you'll have three. 2 years or 3 years? How long has that been?
Is
it the second year?
We're
it's
in the season
year.
Three.
We're in,
yeah.
the
in the season three, yeah.
Yeah, and West Wing was seven, yeah.
Yeah,
and I
so,
think the British series was just two, wasn't it? I think it was two series.
I think
series.
So, yeah.
Huh. Thank you both very much for being with us.
You're very
just
welcome.
Briefly, you just announced next year's season. Do you
yeah.
want to tell us what it is, Mark?
Hopefully. Oh, wow. So we open with Dreamgirls, the musical.
Great.
This
I like the fact you're doing musicals. I really
thank
am
you.
Enjoying
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you know, it's just been. This, I'm just interested in telling great stories, and sometimes those stories are sung through, and sometimes they're text, and sometimes they're danced, and sometimes it's, you know, one of those things or all of those things. So, we've tried to present musicals that not only are entertaining but have a little bit of gravitas and something interesting to say. So, I think Dreamgirls, following on the back of Ragtime and Color Purple in the last couple of years, I think is something we're very excited about. I love that show. I think it's such a great show. Then we're doing The Mousetrap, actually, which has been running in London for 62 years.
Whoa!
And it's just a really great, fun, you know, pre-Christmas sort of treat. And this isn't just in the powerhouse. And then we're doing we're doing Of Mice and Men. I directed a production in Philadelphia a few years ago, which was
award-winning production. Yeah,
it was. Yeah, and
excellent.
And so I'm recreating that.
And we'll have to just stop with that.
Of course.
Just a little taste of what they're doing. And Five Presidents is on now and runs through
till
April 5th. Great. Thank you both so much.
You're
enjoyed
welcome.
The
pleasure. Thank
Mark
you.
Mark Clements, artistic director, Five Presidents, currently at the Rep. Reese Madigan, who plays Special Agent Michael Kirby in the current production. He's a Milwaukee Rep associate. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this show and to Scotty Myers for on-air production.